following is an oral history interview with Lily Shapa Smith by Mark Robbins for the South Texas Hispanic Farm Labor Community's Oral History Project. The interview took place on March 7th, 2013 in Robstown, Texas.
This is Lily Shapa.
Lily Shapa Smith. Mm-hmm. And my recollection of the labor camp in Robstown, Texas was in the summer of 1946. I went to work as a dental assistant. And the dentist was a doctor by the name of Dr. Cole, C-O-L-E. I believe his first name was Robert. He was in the Navy, stationed at the Naval Station in Corpus Christi, and he would commute during the week, every day, you know, to work as a dentist. And he was originally from Peoria, Illinois. And we were always busy because it was during the summer when schools were out, you know, and a lot of children would come to have dental work done, you know, and some grown-ups too, adults, you know, but like I said, lots of children. And the manager of the camp at the time was Mr. Willard Martin. And afterwards, Mr. Martin stayed in Robstown and owned some businesses here in Robstown. They had the labor camp had a big community hall, and I belonged to a social club that ended up buying a piano that we kept there at the community hall. And every time an orchestra or band came to play, they would rent the piano. We charged $25 a night, you know. And so it was good because I don't remember how much rent we paid to the community hall. But anyway, it worked out fine, you know. And I really enjoyed working there. And like I say, it was just for during the summer. And there were not only Hispanics, but there were also black people living there. And they would all go out to work, you know. At that time, Robstown was very progressive, had a lot of field work, you know. At that time, we didn't have any cotton pickers machines. And so they would all go out to work in the fields. And
When did they normally leave for work, and when did they normally get back?
I can imagine that they left at 6 or 7 in the morning. Mm-hmm. They had already left by the time I got to work at 8. And I don't know what time they got back, you know.
Did everybody go together? Were there small children left behind that somebody would babysit?
I imagine, yes, that either the grandmothers would stay and take care of the children, and they would all go to work. There were truckers that picked them up on trucks, you know. Mm-hmm. And now it's against the law to haul people on the back of a truck, but that's what the custom back then.
So how did they know where to go to pick? Did the manager of the labor camp make contacts with local farmers, or?
No, the truckers would.
Okay.
Uh-huh. And then they knew, they would go and talk to the people to see if they were willing to go work for them with the truckers, you know, and then they'd take them out to the fields.
And this was from, if I'm guessing, would this be from July through September, or?
Well, that would be cotton season, yes. Okay. Uh-huh. And I don't know if they worked in the grain business, you know, sorghum, mm-hmm. but that would have started earlier, you know, probably the latter part of June. And that lasted only about 2 or 3 weeks, you know.
Huh. Do you remember how far some folks would come that stayed in the labor camp? Did you meet folks from pretty far away?
From the valley.
Okay.
Here in Texas. And according to people that I've talked to, some from central Texas, definitely during cotton season, you know, people would come from central Texas all over to pick cotton here in Robstown. Hmm.
Were there residents during the other seasons, like during the winter, or were they just usually there for the harvest time?
I don't know if there were residents, you know, mm-hmm. that worked. 'Cause I know before the war, there was a big sheds, you know, vegetable sheds. But they usually, as far as I can remember, I wasn't that old at that time, but there were people from Robstown. They would move from Laredo or the valley to come to work at the sheds. During the day, they would build crates, you know, and at night, by late in the afternoon, the truckers would bring in their harvest, and at night, there would be a lot of men working.
Mm-hmm. And I remember you had mentioned before how they would line the railroad tracks, and so did they sell it just to the folks coming in trains along?
No, the owners of the companies of the sheds, you know, they would sell by phone, you know, to either in Chicago or New York. And so by the time they loaded those cars, they were already sold. They knew exactly where they were destined to go.
And you had a really interesting story, if you wouldn't stating it again, of a time when you were a kid and your dad was going to go to Houston. I thought that was really interesting.
Well, I was grown by then. I worked at a bank.
Oh, that's right. You were...
I must have been in my early 20s, you know. But my dad, now they call it a fleet of trucks, you know. Mm-hmm. And he would sell onions was his priority, you know. And buyers would call him, and there was this buyer that called him from Houston, Choppa, I need number one onion or whatever. And he says, do you have any? And he said, yes, I can get it harvested tomorrow, and my truck will be there tomorrow, well, by the next day, you know, because the market's open at 2 in the morning. The farmer's market in Houston. So by then, all of my dad's truckers, except there was his pickup and a truck in Robstown, but the truckers were all gone, you know, with taking the loads to San Antonio and other places, you know. And so he told Mother, I'm going to have to go, and I'm going to take the load. And Mother says, no, you can't go by yourself. You know, my dad was diabetic, and my mother was afraid, you know, something might happen. He says, I'm sorry, I've already promised, and I have to go. So she said, well, Lily doesn't have to work tomorrow because they have a holiday. She can go with you. And he said, oh, fine. So as soon as we left Robstown, I said, Daddy, let me take over the truck, you know. And it was one of those tandems, you know. At that time, it was like an 18-wheeler, you know. And so I took over the truck, and I drove it until we got to the entrance of Houston, you know. And the traffic there was, even at that time, you know, it was horrendous. So I woke him up. I said, Daddy, take over the truck. We're already in Houston. He says, we're already in Houston, you know. So we got to that time, the farmer's market was right downtown. So he drove the truck in there, and the buyer came in a few minutes, you know. And so then they unloaded the load into the buyer's truck, you know. And the buyer gave him a check. And my dad says, well, we're going to go to breakfast, but we're going to have to wait until the bank opens, you know, because it's better to get a cashier's check than you never know what might happen mm-hmm. to that person. So I said, but Daddy, the banks are closed today. It's a holiday. He says, oh, my goodness, you know. He said, well, we'll go to breakfast anyway. And that's what we did. But, oh, I even pulled my hair up. I always wore long hair, you know, pull my hair up and put my cowboy hat on, you know, to not look like a girl. And the market was beautiful. So many people with their wares, you know, lots of plants and flowers and all kinds of vegetables, you know. That was my first time at a farmer's market.
Wow. And at 2 in the morning, they started.
Yes. Uh-huh. And already there were people like this, like ants, you know, already working at that time of the morning.
And I think you had mentioned before how a lot of the buyers were restaurants and things like that.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Wow, that's a really neat
story.
Or
there was a buyer that he had, like, convenience stores. And I don't know if he had 2 or 3 convenience stores, you know. And he was one of my dad's clients, you know.
So did your dad do business with Houston a lot, or did he?
Yes, Houston was a big market. As a matter of fact, he even relocated his brother, his younger brother, to Houston to become a buyer, you know, or seller, you know. And he would call my dad, we need a load of this or whatever, you know. And eventually my uncle just bought a property and they stayed over there.
So when he was acquiring the crops to sell over in Houston or elsewhere, did he have a group of growers he worked with to get those locally, onions
here? Yes. As a matter of fact, I was looking through some of the old checks, trying to get rid of as much paper as I can, you know, and there was a check made out for $200, not a full payment, a down payment for seed.
Oh, wow.
That he got from someone in Mexico. And then he's contract with the farmers. I'll supply the seeds, you know. And I don't know how they've worked out on the price for the crops, you know. And that's how he did that, you know. Not only not only onions, which was his favorite crop, you know, but also watermelons.
And so these crops, would they be grown outside of the cotton season or just on separate fields, do you know?
Well, I don't know if they planted it, because cotton, they have to plant it now.
Yeah.
I know they have to plant it around, I guess, what is it, March? Or I know this. The grain was planted the latter part of February. Mm-hmm. You know, if they planted in January, we could have had a freeze, you know, and it ruined all the crops, you know.
Did you ever remember years where that happened, where there was a really bad freeze or a really bad drought or anything like
that? Yes, especially, I don't know if it was the 80s, I really don't remember, but we had very bad droughts, you know. And then I remember someone planting, they said, Roy planted in the latter part of January, you know. His crops, his grain is already planted. Well, here comes a big freeze, you know. They had to replant everything again, you know.
Wow, that must have been really difficult.
Mm-hmm.
So at the labor camp, do you remember, I've seen some pictures of kids playing baseball and things like that. Was there a pretty lively recreational community there, and when folks weren't working, or did folks mostly just sort of stay there and then go work?
I heard that at night, some would play the accordion, others had a guitar, and outside of the barracks they would play, you know. Now I wasn't there, but that's what I heard, you know.
And you remembered. I think I recall you mentioning some of the dances they would hold at the...
No, that was at the community hall. Yes, there on the grounds of the labor camp. It was a very nice hall. That's where we kept our piano. Our social club kept a piano, you know. And yes, they would have very nice dances. Big formal dances, you know, maybe in January or May for graduation, you know. Yes, we had some very, very good entertainment there.
Now, the folks who went to the dances, so they were more than just the people living at the camp?
They were not people at the camp. It was people from Robstown that rented the hall.
Okay, interesting.
I imagine that maybe the people living there might have had some social functions. I really don't know.
Did a lot of the permanent residents of Robstown forge relationships or friendships with the migrant workers at the camp?
Not that I remember.
Okay. You know, I had read in the newspaper that sometimes flood victims would be located at the camp, and did you recall any other sort of uses like that of the grounds that weren't just to hold or to house the migrant workers?
No, I don't.
Okay.
I do know that we did. Robstown used to flood a lot.
Yeah.
Until they started putting drainage ditches, you know, and all of that.
Okay. Well, I guess some general questions about Robstown history that I would be kind of interested in is, you know, what kinds of changes have you seen in the main street and downtown from when you were much younger to today? What are...
Okay, I was born and reared on Main Street, this street here. Mm-hmm. And it was dirt or caliche street afterwards, and big ditches in front of the houses. You know, my dad had a beautiful bridge that would go over the ditch, you know. And every time we had a flood, that bridge would flood, you know, and go all the way to probably here downtown, you know. And then after they started working on the drainage, you know, and mm-hmm. paved the streets, you know, I guess that was around the 1950s,
okay,
mid-50s, you know, things just changed. You don't see a flood in Robstown anymore. Hmm. And this was, my mother and dad would say that water never got into our yard, because Daddy built the yard up a lot with field dirt, you know. Mm-hmm. And so whenever there was a flood, well, it was more towards the street, you know, but it never did get into our house or anything like that, or our yard.
Huh.
But, yes, we have had it. Robstown used to be a very progressive town. We had good stores, you know, clothing stores and well, grocery stores. A lot of Hispanics owned some good grocery stores. I remember that we traded with a grocery store that was a block away from where we lived, and we would buy the best boiled ham and cheeses, you know, good T-bone steaks.
Mm-hmm.
And that man would finance the farmers for a whole year. Now, remember, though, that the farmers, I guess, mostly the staples that they would charge, because they had chickens and eggs mm-hmm. and meat, you know, at the farm. But that man did to finance them for a whole year.
And so they would pay it back a year later?
As soon as they harvested their crop, they would pay him.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Were there ever years when the harvest wasn't so good that they had to take a little longer?
I presume that there were. I really don't know. I do remember this, that one year the onion market fell, you know, mm-hmm. and crashed. And my dad had a big investment. For him it was big, mm-hmm. you know. And he would borrow money from the bank to work with, you know. And so the banker told him, he says, "Chapa, don't worry about it. Renew the note, and next year is another year. You can pay it." Mm-hmm. And my dad owned properties besides just the trucks, you know, and he had a 50-acre farm out on 624. Do you know where 624 is?
I'm trying to think of
it's
have
in
the
Cal
right...
Allen.
Okay, yeah.
The properties there are worth a lot of money. I think they're... At one time, like especially where our farm was, you know, it got to about 50,000 or 60,000 an acre.
Oh wow!
Yes, it got up real high, you know, and so he told my mother. He said, "So and so has offered to buy my ranch, you know, my little farm, you know," and he said, "And I'd like to sell it because I'm not used to owing money like that. I cannot work with a clear mind." And so Mom said, well, you work for it. Go ahead and do what's best, you know. And so he did sell it, you know. And my mother went ahead and signed because it was in both names, you know. Yes, there were times, that not very often, but I remember that one incident.
So did you find that most people who were permanent residents of Robstown knew each other?
Very well. Mm-hmm. In fact, in my neighborhood, it was like a family, and we were not related. But, you know, we were very close. And a lot of the kids, we were all about the same age, you know. So, yes, it was very nice growing up in Robstown.
And people helped each other out. And
especially if somebody was sick, you know, that sent soup for the whole family for noon or some others for supper, something else, yes.
Wow. Well, that's really interesting. Do you have other memories that you'd like to share or anything that comes to mind?
No, but what I did forget to tell you is when my brother graduated from high school, he wanted to go to the University of Houston. So he told my dad, he said, Dad, I can go to the market at 2 in the morning and sell your products or whatever you want me to, you know. Excuse me. And then come back to my apartment, get ready to go to class. If you know, he didn't know if the class would be at 8 or 9. Uh-huh. And so that's how he went to college, you know.
So he continued to help out with the business. Well, that must have worked out pretty well then, actually.
He went into the service later on. He did not finish, but he did go, I guess, about 2 or 3 years, you know.
Oh, wow.
But it worked out pretty good.
Well, that's neat. Well, I guess...
And I'll tell you something. My dad's trucks would bring in good watermelons. Oh, I mean, he always had very good crop, you know. And so I would rush to the neighbors, you know, all down about a block away from my house, taking orders. Did anybody want a watermelon, you know? And so I picked up the orders, you know, and come home, we had red wagons, you know, and get a neighbor boy to pull it for me. But by the time we got there, my brother had beaten me to it and had not taken the orders. He'd go with his wagon with watermelons and sell them ahead of me. And the neighbors would think, well, that's the one that Lily came, the order Lily came and picked up, you know.
That's funny. So a little competition there. Uh-huh. That's very funny.
But I can't say that my dad and mom would say you so much for an allowance, but they did give us an allowance, you know. We'd have a cigar box, and he'd have quarters and nickels and things like that. And he says, go ahead and get whatever you need. Hi.
Good afternoon.
And so I was, you know, real unselfish, I guess. I'd get a nickel.
Mr. Mark.
How are you doing?
I'm Pedro.
Oh, very nice to meet you.
You know him. Yeah. You know, he's our new secretary of the museum.
Oh, we haven't met. I guess I'll stop this right here. Oh, thank you very much, unless you wanted to add more. Thank you very much, Lily.